Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Hello and welcome to The Tool Shed. This is Chris Clegg. I am doing the intro and hosting today. Is my co-host Eric Cross is on the mend. He is not quite fully back with his voice, but we're here and we're back for episode 328, another great episode of the Tool Shed Pod that we are looking forward to diving back in. I know it's been several days since we've recorded and put out an episode, and we thank you for bearing with us. But Eric, how are you doing and how's your recovery been?
Man, not quite fully back is the nicest way of saying my voice sounds like absolute crap. That was a very PG-13 way of putting it. But yeah, so apologies for my voice. Giving it a go right now just to get an episode out this week. Probably will be the only one we get out this week. But I had a lot of things we wanted to talk about. Some promotions, some hot and cold prospects. So we still got some fun things. But yeah, I'm going to take a little bit of a back seat today and let my co-host with the much better voice right now do more of the talking.
All right. And the usual housekeeping, be sure to check out RotoBaller, the sponsor of our show. Use our code TOOLSHED at RotoBaller.com. Gets you discount and premium access to all things at RotoBaller. Play fantasy baseball. You play fantasy football. I know that season is coming up, so it's a great place to be. There's a ton of great content and a ton of great stuff going up on the site. So be sure to check that out. Use our code TOOLSHED to subscribe. We're going to talk some MLB promotions. We have some prospects that have been called up and several that are recalled. And we're also going to take a look at who's going to be next. Who are the next wave of prospects coming? It's August 6th as we're recording this, meaning that we're going to have some promotion soon because service time manipulation has and will happen, but also at the same time, teams can bring players up at the end of the month and they will not eclipse prospect status. I think we calculated in the Dynasty Dugout Discord that Junior Caminero can come up on August the 25th and yep, still maintain prospect eligibility for next season to make a run at Rookie of the Year. Sad reality at this point of the season, they're not going to rush him up, but do I think that he comes up around then? Probably. So we'll talk about that and break it down. But first, let's get to some recent MLB promotions. We had a couple Orioles, one making their major league debut and another getting recalled and has been quite good, and that's Kobe Mayo and Jackson Holliday. Now, Kobe Mayo is the one that we've been waiting on for a while. Holliday made his debut earlier this year, but we've been clamoring for Mayo for quite some time, and finally, he got the call. It's only been 11 plate appearances so far. It's not been pretty, but again, give these guys time. Don't write them off so quick. And I think that Kobe Mayo is going to be just okay. He was one of the best hitting prospects in the minor leagues this year. In AAA, he hit 20 home runs, put up a slash line of 301, 375, 586. Good contact rates, big exit velocities. Eric, what are your thoughts on Kobe Mayo coming up? And is there value to be had this year for him for fantasy leagues?
Yeah, I definitely think there can be. And I'm actually surprised he got the call right now, to be honest with you, because I thought he was going to go the same route as Cameron Arrow and go the service time route, which I think his would have been like the 16th or 17th of August or something like that. But hey, I'm happy he's been in the lineup three out of the first four games. Nice seeing him and Holiday in the bottom of that lineup. And this speaks volumes to how good Baltimore's done when you have two elite prospects like Mayo and Holiday just hitting eighth and ninth for you. Well, you know, with a great front seven. But yeah, as we know, Mayo has been one of the best power hitting prospects in the minor leagues the last couple of years. It's easy double plus power, potential 35 plus homer bat. And what really has impressed me the most, though, out of him is just like the strides he's made as a pure hitter, making better contact these days than he did a year or two ago, more walks, less strikeouts. He did a lot of things that made me think, all right, maybe this guy's going to be a 270 hitter at the major league level as opposed to a 240 to 250 hitter. And it still remains to be seen. He has all the makings of being the next elite third baseman in this league and getting right up there with Devers, with Riley, with Joe Ram, getting right up into that tier one. Yeah, it may not happen this year. I do think he can hit for some nice power right away. I mean, the average, as we've seen, can be up and down, but yeah, long-term, he's a top three prospect for me and has been for most of the season now. And yeah, I think he's going to be just fine. So just, again, like you said, give him patience. We're so very quick to be like, oh, he hasn't done anything his first three games. Oh, he's a bum. Oh, he's not ready. No, he's ready. He proved that he was ready. So give him a little bit of time.
I agree. And look what happens when we give guys a chance and they don't always come up and dominate. But David Festa, for instance, I was just writing him up after his performance yesterday. His first two starts, he allowed 12 earned runs in 10 innings. And then he's come back up at the end of July. And over his last three starts, he's allowed a total of three earned runs and has looked incredibly good since then. And the same can be said for the other Oriole that came back up. And that's Jackson Holiday, which I think they handled this situation correctly. They obviously sent him down. He was really bad out of the gate. It was a small sample. And there were some struggles even in AAA. But they waited till he got hot. It was the perfect time. He had a really good July. And they call him back up. And what has he done? He's proceeded to mash. As we're recording this, he just hit another home run off of Chris Bassett. And that gives him three since coming back up. We know he homered in his first game back up on July 31st. And he has scored a run in every game, which is crazy to look at and see. But Holiday's been incredibly good. I think he's going to be all right, Eric. Thoughts on Holiday and his long-term outlook?
Yeah, no, I never had any doubts that he was going to be fine. I saw some doubts about where is he ultimately as a power hitter. Is he upper teens? Is he low 20s? Is he maybe mid to upper 20s? And that question I still have. That's the one I've had for a while now, but we've seen that the raw power is there. The metrics showed that in the minor leagues. And I literally put zero stock into his first, 34 plate appearances. This guy comes from obviously a baseball family, and what a thing to fall back on. Like, hey, came up there, struggled. Maybe you want to hang your head a little bit, but now you got Matt Holiday as your dad to keep you centered, keep you focused. I had no concerns. This guy put up the numbers he did for a reason. This guy was one of the two that Baseball America gave a 70 grade hit to, a hit tool to, for a reason coming into this year. Yeah, he's going to be a all-around stud, and maybe he's not middle-of-the-order master, but he's got eventually, not this year because of all the guys they got, eventually this is a guy that's tailor-made to be like a number two hitter or something like that, getting on base in front of Gunner and all of them, and Kobe Mayo eventually as well. Guy's probably going to score a ton of runs given his on-base abilities. The guys will have behind him. He's a good runner as well. So, yeah, I'm still as in now on Holiday as I was 6 months ago. So I think everyone else should be as well. This is a very talented hitter with a very bright future.
Yep, I agree. Again, I think this is a perfect analogy as to why we give players a chance. It doesn't always come together immediately. It takes time. And I believe this is just another case of that. Players get a taste of the major leagues, and I would say the jump from AAA to the majors is bigger than ever right now. And I think we're seeing that. A lot of guys have come up and struggled out of the gate, but they find their confidence, they find their footing, they come back and are pretty good. This guy that we're going to talk about next that finally got the call has been in AAA for quite some time. He actually made it to AAA in 2021. It was on his fourth season in AAA with the Astros. That's Pedro Leon, who has accumulated over 1,500 AAA plate appearances, and he's having quite a good year in AAA. Got the call. He had 19 home runs, 23 stolen bases. The contact skills had improved. He was lifting the ball more, hitting the ball harder than he ever had at any point in his career, and the results showed. It was a 297, 377, 519 slash. Good for an 896 OPS. So far, Leon has come up and he's not really played consistently, which is what I expected. I was worried about this happening. I really think that they should have traded him, in my opinion, sold high on the AAA season. But here we are. And now Zach DiZinzo has gotten the call as well to this team. And it probably just puts out Leon pretty much, but he had made several starts. Leon started three straight days, but it's set for the first couple of coming up. But back on the bench today in favor of DiZinzo, who is DHing. And I think we're on the verge of seeing several other Astros prospects come up too. Shea Whitcomb was mentioned that he might be coming up. So we have a pair of Astros here in DiZinzo and Leon. With Leon, again, I'm not sure how much there is to talk about. I think that he must have something against their GM, knows something. The fact that he stayed down as long as he did was pretty wild. And yeah, obviously Leon is not like a stud like they once thought when they signed him. But we are talking about someone who is probably going to end up having two straight 2020 seasons. And in 2022, it was a 17 homer, 38 stolen base season. So pretty good track record. The contact has improved at every stop. The quality of contact has improved as well. He's chasing less. He's making enough contact. So for Leon, it's interesting. I'm wondering if they just called him up for bench depth. But Eric, any thoughts on Leon? And then we can shift gears to Zach DiZinzo, who's probably the more exciting player to talk about here.
Yeah, Leon's always been, he's always been fun. He's always put up the power speed numbers. I just don't know where he fits in. I really don't. I was surprised to hear him get the call. I thought out of these three, between Leon, DiZinzo, and Shea Whitcomb, I thought Shea Whitcomb was actually going to get the call first, given his defensive versatility around the infield. But you know, Leon has versatility as well. Don't get me wrong. But you want to hear a fun fact, though, Chris? So Pedro Leon debuted in AAA on July 20th, 2021. Jackson Holliday was in the summer between his junior and senior years of high school. This puts in perspective. Holiday got drafted the next summer. That's just crazy to think about, that Leon's been AAA for that long. It's not like he's been terrible in AAA. The averages have been pretty low, 228 in 2022, 244 last year, but still having 18 home runs, 21 home runs, 38 steals, 21 steals this year, 19 and 23. I think there's a fantasy player to be had here. I just don't know if it's in Houston. I don't know how to make all these guys fit. Obviously, they already have a pretty good starting lineup as it is, especially in that infield. Jeremy Pena being the younger, newer guy in that infield. But I don't know. If Leon were to get a shot, I'd have some intrigue. Like I said, he's got that power speed blend. You give him a full season worth of at bats, he could be pushing 15 plus home runs and 20 plus steals, probably with a lower average. He's a guy that can walk a little bit too. So I don't know. I guess I'm not really overly intrigued right now outside of a flyer in deeper leagues. But I don't know. Who are you more intrigued by long-term, Chris, between Leon and Zach DiCenzo.
Much preferred DiCenzo here.
Yeah.
But it speaks volumes to me that Chaz McCormick has been as bad as he has been, and Jake Myers has been as bad as he is, and Leon's still not really getting that chance. Now you come in with DiCenzo, who it spent the beginning of the year hurt, so he got a late start to the year where I think he probably was starting the year in AAA after his great stint in AA last year. This is a former 12th round pick out of Ohio State that the Astros absolutely nailed. It's big raw power, and the hit tool has really developed in the Astros org, which has been encouraging to see. And he only had about 170 plate appearances so far this year in the minors, most of it coming at the complex in AA. But in 53 AAA plate appearances, he had been hitting the cover off the ball. Had four home runs, three stolen bases, and a 391, 472, 739 slash. Good for an OPS over 1,200 over that span. The exit velocities were really good. 106 mile hour ninth percentile is really strong. And the contact skills had been pretty good too. You know, 77% overall will certainly play. That's an above average rate for AAA standards and about average for major league standards. And the chase rate also better than average too. DiCenzo's pretty tooled up. He's got big raw power. He gets to some poolside power in Houston. He's going to hammer those Crawford boxes. The question's always been the hit tool and how would that play? Because last year we did see him get the bump to AA and he struck out 29% of the time. And then this year, those contact rates and strikeout rates have both improved at both stops, which is really encouraging to see. So look at this profile, and I'm pretty excited about DiCenzo, someone that I think, even if he doesn't run all that much, I think there is speed to burn here. He's a good athlete, and he's really efficient too, which is the key thing in my opinion. He has been caught just three times in his entire career, which is great to see. He stole 22 bases last year, caught twice, and so far this year still in five, caught just once. So he's been really efficient on the base paths, and I think that's a big thing on getting the green light. We'll see how much he runs in the majors. We know the power is going to be there. The question is, does he hit enough? And I certainly think he can. I have no questions that I think he can be a slightly below average hitter, maybe hits 250, but I think that'll play. The bat is a lot of fun here with DiCenzo.
Yeah, and I wonder, is he their next starting third baseman? Because Bregman's a free agent after this year. Obviously, they could bring him back if the money's right. So obviously, he has a long-term commitment they've already made with Bregman. Bregman was drafted, almost a decade ago at this point, or at least 7-8 years ago, 2015, 16, I want to say. He entered their organization, so obviously they could bring him back. There's familiarity there. He fits the ballpark well, but if he does go, if he wants too much, that could open up third base for DiCenzo. He's played all over the diamond a little bit, but primarily he's been a third baseman for most of his minor league career. This year, 27 games there, handful at first. He had a little bit of second base last year. So, yeah, maybe he's the next third baseman for Houston, and that'd be kind of a nice little, not a sleeper, but, I think a good value target because he is a very talented player all around. Guy could give you 20-plus home runs. Maybe more, as you mentioned, if he really tackles and targets those Crawford boxes, maybe 25, 30 home runs and give you some speed as well. So he could be a kind of a sneaky target because I don't think the perceived value on him is all that high. People obviously know about him, but I don't usually see him ranked too highly really anywhere. So, yeah, great value target here.
Yeah, and I'm pretty confident that we see Bregman walk, maybe not, but I think that Bregman probably is not a Houston Astro next year. Who knows? A lot could happen, but I do think that the Astros farm's underrated, and I think DiCenzo is just a big part of that. I think that he's flown under the radar for a while. He was a little buzzy last year, but I think this is a borderline top 100 prospect that we're looking at that's now debuting, and I think that he should get run. I don't see a reason why they call him up and not play him versus Leon. Obviously, he would sit in AAA for 4 years. Another call up that we had was Dylan Dingler being called up by the Detroit Tigers. Dingler is someone that I had let slip through the cracks for a while. I really liked him out of the draft. Talked about DiCenzo. This is another Ohio State draftee. Dingler went in the second round of the 2020 draft, 38th overall, got a near $2 million bonus. And Dingler was slow out of the gate. He made it to double A in his first full season. Didn't put up the best numbers, and then had an up and down career. But this year has really taken a huge step forward in a lot of ways. And he's put up the numbers. Now, he's been inconsistent playing time so far. But the good news is he's caught back-to-back days at this point. He's catching right now. He's splitting time with Jake Rogers. But to me, it looks like it's a 50-50 split at this point. But the good news is he is getting a little run. And I think if he starts hitting, he's just going to take Jake Rogers' spot. I don't really see him being interference here, letting Dingler in easy to the major leagues. And if the bat performs, then obviously I think it's his spot to lose. But 300 plate appearances in AAA, Dingler had 17 home runs. He's a pretty good athlete, too. He's shown the ability to swipe a few bags here and there, five this year, which is encouraging. And he had a 308, 379, 559 slash. So pretty impressive numbers there for Dylan Dingler. But under the hood is what really impressed me and is where he's made a lot of improvements. It was a 91-mile-an-hour average EV. That's a solid mark. 105 ninth percentile. It's above average to plus power. The contact rates really jumped this year. 75% overall, 85% end zone. Both those marks really good for a catcher, especially. And just a 26% chase rate. I look at that data and think that there's a lot to like here with Dylan Dingler. He's lifting the ball more. I think that was also something that he had struggled with in the past, was a few too many ground balls, but he's lifting it much better this year. A lot of line drives and a lot of pulled balls. I look at this profile and I think it's one that can really work. And I'm really excited to see what Dingler does, hopefully with regular playing time, at least semi-regularly. But I think you're looking at a pretty solid OBP play. Could be a good points league play with some good pop too. He's already hit a 106 so far in a very small sample and 96 mile an hour average EV to this point. So again, we're looking at a tiny sample for Dylan Dingler in the majors, but he's shown some good things, which is promising in my opinion. Any thoughts on Dingler that you have?
Yeah, no, he's one that's definitely always been a bit under the radar. He's a catcher. Catching prospects tend to get a little undervalued in general, and he wasn't one that stood out, so that kind of added to it, and I'm guilty of that as well. I had him ranked way too low. When I look at Dingler, I think of a guy that could be just a really good, you play in two catcher formats, like a really good second catcher. I don't think he's ever going to be a C1, a top 12, top 15 fantasy catcher, but maybe he's a guy that's a C2, like a solid upper half C2 at that. You mentioned that the quality of contact this year was pretty damn good. 46% hard hit rate, 14% barrel rate. The walk rate has steadily improved over the years. It's been over 10% each of the last 3 years in the minor leagues. K rate's come down as well. You mentioned that the overall contact rate around 75%. Yeah, again, it's not a profile that really stands out, but could he be a 260 hitter with 15 to 20 home runs that plays 110 games a year? Sure. I feel he'll probably be in that timeshare with Rogers for the rest of this year, but next year is when he moves ahead on that depth chart. Rogers is fine. Nothing wrong with Jake Rogers, but he isn't really going to hold a young, promising catcher back from additional reps long-term. Especially for a team like Detroit, who's in a rebuild, has a lot of young players, trying to see what they have with these guys. So, yeah, I see the playing time taking a step forward next year, and maybe he's a top 15 to 18 or so catcher next year. So yeah, I think there's a sneaky, fun profile here with Dylan Dingler.
I agree. I think that somebody that certainly should be on your radar to keep a close eye on, because I do believe in this bat, and I think he's evolved as a catcher too. I think he's become pretty underrated at this point, but we did have one more prospect that was recalled, not one that made his major league debut, actually debuted earlier this year. That's Cardinals outfielder Victor Scott II, who just homered as we are recording this right now. He's made some pretty tangible changes in his swing, and the results have showed so far, which is encouraging to me. Now, Victor Scott was a fun one that we both saw in the AFL last year. I really love the profile. Obviously, it's a elite speed profile, really good defense. But he did come back up, yesterday went 0-for-3. Today, already had a home run, so that's pretty encouraging. But even in AAA, the numbers had been not great. It was a 219 average, a 302 OBP, and a 318 slug. It was a sub-100 ISO, not great. He had hit a ton of balls on the ground, but he had 6 home runs, just 29 stolen bases after stealing 94 last year. It was quite the drop-off, but nothing's really changed. It's still a speedy profile. I don't think you're looking at a slap hitter either. Scott's young. I think there's still a lot to like here. And I actually think that he had underperformed a bit. You look at those AAA slash lines. Ooh, that's not really good. Not what you want to see. But the contact rates had still been really good. 82% overall, 91% end zone. Low chase, bad EVs. But again, this is not going to be somebody that hits the cover off the ball, but can get to enough juice to get you 5 to 10 home runs, I think, and can steal some bags. Good to see Scott homer tonight. That home run was 100 mile an hour EV, 391 feet. So you like to see that. But any thoughts on Victor Scott coming back up? And is there a fantasy viable profile here?
Man, remember that whole Victor Scott versus Esteri Ruiz debate on Twitter? I guess the answer to that one was neither at the time. Yep. But no, I still like Victor Scott. I still think there's a fantasy relevant player to be had here. Did we push him too high up rankings this offseason? Yep. Hindsight's 20/20 on that one for sure. But as you mentioned, this is still one of the most elite runners in all of baseball. If you had a 100 meter dash Olympic style and had 8 players to pick from all of baseball, he'd probably be one of the 8 you'd have in that race. He's incredibly fast. And contact rate this year in AAA, but 82%, which is pretty solid. And you mentioned the quality of contact hasn't been great. But that's not what you want from him. And it's not like it's been like absolutely terrible. It's 26% hard hit rate, only a 2% barrel rate. So yeah, it hasn't been great. 85 mile an hour EV. But if he can just give you 5 to 10 at this point, like that's all you really need. I still think he can hit 260 or above, get on base, steal a ton of bags. I don't know there's so many moving parts here in St. Louis. You'll get the return of Jordan Walker at some point. Who knows when that's going to be? He's starting to heat up a little bit now in AAA. Obviously, you've had Alec Burleson emerge. He's played a little bit of outfield for them. I still don't know how this outfield shakes out long-term. Obviously, Newt Barr is there as well. Donovan can play some outfield. Kind of wonder how this outfield shifts out long term. This is with the Tommy Pham for the rest of this year as well. Scott's played both games since he got recalled, so if he plays regularly and just be adequate at the plate or just not terrible, he's a guy that could give you 40 bags without even thinking about it. And if he plays a full year, heck, even 50-60 bags or even more are within this guy's realm of possibilities. So yeah, I still think there's a fantasy relevant player here, and I'd still be looking to buy low if that possibility is out there for you.
I think so, too. I think that there's certainly the potential there. It's just, can you get the regular playing time and can you actualize it? Does the swing change work and stick? And I think you can go, if you go on Twitter, I want to get the correct handle, Kareem. Let's see. I do want to, because I saw the video, Kareem, at Kareem Essen, and put a collage together of the swings and the differences from earlier in the year to now, and the hands are much higher. Looks like his bat path's a little better, so that's encouraging to see. He had apparently worked with Ryan Ludwig to get some more power, and over his final 9 AAA games, the slug went to 611, so something to watch. I'm curious what happens here. We're going to quickly hit on some who's next. Who is going to be the next prospect called up? And who can make an impact for you down the stretch? We can both go back and forth and hit a couple. I think that probably the most obvious one is Junior Caminero. And as I mentioned, Caminero probably comes up later August. I don't see a reason that at this point they call him up when they can keep him down for 2 more, 3 more weeks and end up getting an extra year and him be prospect eligible. He can make a run at Rookie of the Year next year. So I think Junior Caminero is the obvious one here to stash. The pickings are getting slim, though, as who is going to come up. But If you have any thoughts on Caminero, feel free to shoot him my way. And if you have any other names, let's talk about them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned calculating the date, because I was doing that exact same thing when I was doing my article for RotoBaller this morning, or on Tuesday morning for my stash article, because I was like, yeah, when is that date? Yeah, I believe I came up with the 25th as well. So that's, you know, and maybe they surprise us, but don't be shocked if it's another nearly 3 weeks from now. After him, the next one I had, Jason Dominguez, but he's kind of been a little cold since returning to AAA last week, but Alex Verdugo has not been hitting well either. Maybe they just say, all right, Jason, we know what you're capable of. Let's bring you back up. Or they could just keep, I don't know. I'm so torn on Jason. Part of me is like, all right, they saw the player that they brought him up last year. He had 4 home runs in 8 games. He had that city on the edge of its seat. They know what he's capable of. And then again, he's also struggling right now. So I don't know. There's only one spot open for him too, and that'd be him going in there and taking Verdugo's spot. But I do think we see him. Yeah, so Jason is my next one to look at here. And you know, another one you kind of wonder about is the guy that's still mashing after the trade, and that's Davison De Los Santos in Miami. When do you think we see him, Chris, or even him or Augustin Ramirez?
I wouldn't be shocked to see him up in later this month, early September. I don't think the Marlins are going to be one that, you know, pushes and puts them in a spot where they lose prospect eligibility next year. But right. I do think they could at least excite the fans by bringing up De Los Santos. Currently, they're starting Jonah Bride at first base. And I love Jonah Bride because he's a South Carolina Gamecock. But he's been hot for the last week. I just don't see him blocking Davison De Los Santos here. And you've got Nick Forte and Ali Sanchez catching. Does Ramirez stick behind the plate? Maybe not long term, but I guarantee you that he could come up and at least be the catcher that these two guys are behind the plate and provide a better bat. And you've got some spots open for him to even DH. I think De Los Santos can play first. He may DH some. Augustin Ramirez is going to DH some. There's nobody really blocking these guys. Why not bring up the young guys and see what they've got? It's worked with Xavier Edwards. He's looked awesome. You've got Jake Berger, who has finally come back to form and been really good recently. Jesus Sanchez hit the longest home run of the year last night. They've got Kyle Stowers up too. Let these young guys come up and play. There's no reason, in my opinion, to keep running out an Emmanuel Rivera or a Jonah Bride or Otto Lopez, who's been fine. Vidal Brujan's playing some. I think the ship's kind of sailed there. They've even got Christian Pache up and playing. Derek Hill in that outfield. There's opportunities for plenty of Marlins to come up, and you have to think that the first that are going to get the call are your Augustin Ramirez, Connor Norby, Davison De Los Santos. The only question is De Los Santos is not on, he's not on their 40 man. It doesn't look like, even though it feels like he would need to have been. He was on Cleveland's 40 man, but I guess they returned him, so he would not have been. Augustin's on the 40 man, it looks like to me. Norby, Pauly, like these guys could come up and make an impact. So I'm curious with what they do. Adam Mazur could also come up and pitch in that rotation. So the Marlins obviously have a IL full of pitchers. They've got Alcantara, Braxton Garrett, Jesus Lazaro, Yuri Perez, Sixto, and Ryan Weathers all in the IL right now. Their rotation, Edward Cabrera, Rodri Munoz, Max Meyer, Valente Velozo, and Kyle Tyler. Yeah, we could see Mazur come up too. And I think that they could certainly call up quite a few guys down the stretch that would be pretty fun to see how they performed. I'll hit one more. I think Colby Thomas comes up fairly soon for the Athletics. Again, it's another one where let the kids play and see what they got. We've seen Lawrence Butler begin to thrive. We've seen J.J. Bleda really begin to thrive. Brent Rooker. And so Colby Thomas, the only tough thing is all the players that have been performing are in the outfield, which Colby Thomas, also an outfielder. They need infield help, and Thomas is not going to provide that, which is unfortunate. He's also not on the 40-man, but Colby Thomas has been really good this year. He's made strides with the hit tool, which I think is pretty encouraging. He hits the ball hard. He's got plenty of power and speed. Last year, if I'm not mistaken, Colby Thomas was the minor league extra base hit leader. And guess what? He's right there again this year. Between double and triple A, we're looking at 34 doubles, 3 triples, and 23 home runs. That's pretty ridiculous, the amount of extra base hits that Colby Thomas has. He hits the ball hard. He makes enough contact to be passable. I think that he could be the next one to come up. Just the question that I have is, he's now in the 40 man, and where does he fit? But it's hard to argue against his results so far and the fact that he's been pretty dang good. So I'll be curious how this shakes out. But if you have any thoughts on Colby Thomas, feel free to fire away.
Yeah, that's who I was going to mention as well. That's who I had next up on my rankings on my RotoBar article, because he's been really good. And I think he would have already been up, like he's mentioned, and something I mentioned in my article as well. All three outfielders plus Rooker at DH are hitting over 280 over the last month. That includes Miguel Andujar. That includes J.J. Blade. And who's the other outfielder out there? I'm forgetting. But yeah, they're all hitting well. And Brent Rooker has been one of the best hitters in baseball for the last several months of the season. So I don't really know when he fits in. Maybe it's an injury. I don't know. But definitely a fun little fantasy profile there for sure. So if he does get the call, I would definitely have a good amount of intrigue there.
I definitely agree. I would be excited for him to get the call. Whether it happens or not, we shall see. But yeah, I think that most of the big name prospects that are going to get called up have gotten the call. I will say that Dalton Rushing, I do think, is going to get the call. We'll talk a little bit about why in the next segment, but let's take a quick break and we will be right back with Three Up, Three Down and talk about Dalton Rushing. All right, we're back. It's Three Up, Three Down time. This week's edition is hitters. We have a couple of Dodgers to hit on that are on the up, because the Dodgers, what do you know? They develop prospects and they look really good. Let's start off the top with Dalton Rushing, though. He is recently promoted to AAA, and the talk is that Rushing's only going to play left field in AAA, which here's what it tells me, that Dalton Rushing is going to get the call this year. His bat can certainly help this Dodgers team down the stretch. And the outfield, they could use some help. And I think they see this as an avenue to get his bat in the lineup down the stretch and in the postseason. So I look at this move to AAA and the fact they said, okay, Dalton, you're only going to play in the outfield. And I say, all right, here we go. He's going to be up soon. He's been extremely good over the last 2 weeks. 7 home runs, which is pretty impressive. And since the All-Star break, it's a 288, 383, 750 slash line. Rushing hits, and he's progressed behind the plate, which is encouraging. I wouldn't say this move rules him out from catching long-term. I do think that he can still catch, which is encouraging. But Dalton Rushing can hit, and that's what he's going to do. His profile is hit first. He has an 891 OPS on the year, 17 home runs, and now he's up to AAA. And it's a profile that I really like a lot. I feel like there had been some prospect fatigue on Dalton Rushing, and it's crazy to say he was just drafted in 2022. I see people on Twitter say he was old for AA. He was 23 years old in 5 months. He was 2 years removed from being drafted. I don't think he's old at all. Remember, this is a player that sat behind Henry Davis at Louisville for several years. And since he got that 1 year of starting job at Louisville, and since being drafted, he's done nothing but hit. He's got a ton of raw power. He's got some of the best plate discipline skills in the minor leagues. And it looks like to me he can still catch long-term. Maybe he splits time with Will Smith. He may not catch this year, but I do think long-term he can still catch. This bat's going to play. Eric, any thoughts on Dalton Rushing, his dominant stretch, and now the call to AAA?
Yeah, it's funny to see them put him in the outfield. And it comes right after I tweeted out today about how mediocre that Andy Páez has been lately, or really for the last few months. And yet Teoscar's been doing really well out there. It's Hayward. He's been all right. Andy Páez has been all right as well, but not great, as I mentioned. They want to get a better bat into that lineup, give it a nice little jump start in the bottom there. So I like this a lot. Because rushing, the two consistencies with rushing have been power and getting on base. mean, this guy, as you mentioned, some of the best plate discipline we've seen. Walk rate well over 10% in the minor leagues. This guy's just, he hits extra base hits and he walks. That's really what he does. Look at 196 minor league games, 132 walks, 44 doubles, 40 home runs, 273, 413, 522 slash line. So, yeah, kind of long term, you know, maybe he's part, hopefully he still catches enough to retain eligibility. And then obviously get some time in the outfield, which is great. A catcher that doesn't have to catch all the time, phenomenal, right? So, yeah, I think there's some really sneaky value here to be had. The whole, like, oh, Henry Davis thing, but he's better than Henry Davis. You know, he has more power than Davis ever has, a better approach, better on-base abilities, better contact abilities than Davis ever had. So this is the one to get excited about. I know we all were with Davis in the spring, but yet Dalton Rushing definitely has, you know, he could be a guy that has some back-end C1 value. I'm not saying like right away, but long-term, that's the type of player he's capable of being.
100%. And really excited about the bat. Really excited to see him in AAA. He's going to mash in the PCL. And I think we're looking at maybe a month until he's in a Dodgers uniform. So I think that's a good one to stash. It's a good segue from the who's next to the three up, three down. And I think Dalton Rushing is certainly somebody to potentially go ahead and get stashed. Let's hit our first down. And this one comes after probably one of the better starts to a single A career. But since moving to high A, Aiden Miller has had it rough. And over the last couple of weeks, things have certainly not been going his way. Miller's an interesting one to keep an eye on. But over the last 2 weeks, it's a 195 average and a 268 slug. He's actually got on base at a 353 clip. So that's encouraging that he's walking at a 17.5% clip. But he's also striking out over 33% of the time over the last 2 weeks. That's 621 OPS is a little discouraging. And it's really not just the last few weeks. It's been a struggle since he got bumped to high A. And we're looking at a pretty equal sample at this point between low A to high A. 158 plate appearances. It's a 193 average, 310 OBP, and a 311 slug. So his 621 OPS is actually identical to what he's done the last 2 weeks. Miller has two home runs over that span and just six doubles and two triples. Striking out a little bit more, the strikeout rate has ballooned. Not too high, just over 25%. But Miller's an interesting one, and I think he's an interesting talking point because I think a lot of people were getting sky high on Aiden Miller, but I think there were some reasons to pause just given the profile. And here's why. Miller put up some pretty interesting numbers in single A. The single A Florida State League StatCast data is public. And you look, and it was a 106 mile an hour, ninth percentile. And people were like, oh man, this power is really good. But yeah, it came with a average EV and a hard hit rate that were actually pretty low. Miller actually has one of the lower hard hit rates among minor leaguers. It's bad. The hard hit balls, which kind of jumped his ninth percentile that high, were a lot of ground balls. And he doesn't lift all that. He does pull the ball, but his hardest hit balls are not to the lift or the pull side. So that's a little bit discouraging, in my opinion. And I think that Miller's not the best athlete in the world. And he had rocketed up lists. You know, I'd seen him in top 20s, top 15s on social media. It's a little more reserved. And I think that now we're seeing a little bit of the downside. Again, I think this is a profile that's going to have to be a third baseman long term, probably not a shortstop. I don't think the athleticism is there. The glove's not there to be a shortstop in my book. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on this bat to hit. I like Aiden Miller. Still have him in my top 100. I think I have him around 60, 70 overall. But I do think there's some question marks here. And I think that he's going to need to return and show these. What Miller does well is he does chase. We've seen that be consistent at both levels. And he's put up really good OBPs at both stops. And relative to the batting average, at least. I know the BABIP's low. I know the BABIP's fueled a little bit lower of a batting average. But all I have to say, the quality of contact has not been that great with Aiden Miller, really, at either stop. The barrel rate's kind of low at both. So just something to think about with Aiden Miller. But Eric, any thoughts on Miller?
Yeah, I definitely don't think he's a shortstop. That's all he's played so far in the minor leagues. But, yeah, I definitely don't believe this is a guy that's sticking there. Maybe he still plays some there next year, but I think you'll start seeing some third base creep in next year and then more and more, and probably that's being his long-term home. Though they have Alec Bohm there too, so I don't know where he fits in long-term in Philadelphia. Maybe he's a trade chip. Who knows? But I was one of those guys that went pretty high on Adam Miller. You know, I was drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. And he's got a lot of extra base hits right now. He's at 22 doubles in 74 games this year, but 16 of those were in low A in 39 games. He's earning 10 total extra base hits in 35 games since getting the bump up to high A. But as you mentioned, he's still walking, you know, a good amount. There's not like any major swing and miss issues. Even now when he's already hitting 193 in high A, and the K rate is just a tick over 25%. So there's not any big swing and miss issues here. You know, I think he's a guy that's probably 10 to 15 steals long term. I think he'll at least give you something there. Where's the power at? You know, I still think we're looking at a solid hitter overall, but is he 15 home runs? Is he 20? Is he 25 plus? I think that's really the X factor here that we're looking at here. And a lot of places had him as a plus power bat, potentially coming out of the draft last year, but we haven't seen that. You mentioned the kind of lackluster quality of contact that he was showing in low A. Barrel rate was like 6%, ERA on 87. Not terrible, but not what you were hoping for out of him either. I don't know. I still have him. I think I have him around 50 overall now. I did have him in my top 25 at one point, but I looked to buy lows, as I think is perceived value. Has taken a pretty sizable hit, but that power is really going to be the X factor in determining, is he just like a back-end fantasy guy, or is he a potential impact one of that hot corner?
For sure, and for what it's worth, the contact rate is identical between low and high A. So that's at least encouraging. While he's striking out a little more, he's swinging less, but the contact rate is identical. Go to our next up. It's another Dodger. Shocker. The Dodgers develop players like no other. It's one of my favorites. It's Emil Morales, who has been arguably the best hitter in the DSL. Put Eduardo Beltre up there too. But Morales has done nothing but hit. He's up to 12 home runs and 10 stolen bases and 171 plate appearances. For what it's worth, I wouldn't put a lot of stock in stolen bases. This is a big bodied player. It's 6'3", 191. He's a good athlete. I don't know if he steals long-term. What I do know is the power is going to be there. He's got a 336 average, 480 OBP, and a 688 slug on the year. And all he's done is continue to hit. Over the last week, he's hit 4 home runs. You go back since the All-Star break, it's 6 home runs. He just continues to mash. Morales is going to come stateside next year. He's 17 years old. I think this is a case where we see him probably moves over to the complex in the offseason, maybe play some tricky league games, some instructional league games there. And then we get to see him next year. My question is, does he skip to single A? It's interesting because we saw them do that with Josue De Paula, and I almost think it stunted his development a little bit. But then this past year, we saw them send Eduardo Quintero and Yohindri Vargas to the complex, and now Quintero, at least, has debuted in single A. I wouldn't be shocked if Vargas is not far behind him. But Morales has been stellar this year. I think it's massive raw power. He's got some of the best power in the DSL. The frame suggests that's there. He's got a good feel for contact. He doesn't hit the ball on the ground at all. He can take a walk. He pulls the ball. It's everything you want to see, in my opinion. And I've recently bumped Emil Morales right around my top 50 overall in my prospect rankings. I just think he's that good. Like, I look at what Yoenri Vargas did last year. I think Morales is better. So that's where I stand on Morales, but feel free to give your thoughts here on Morales and how good this guy has been.
Man, he checks, obviously he's 17, right? So still a long way away from even sniffing the Dodgers. But for a 17-year-old, like, he checks off all the boxes. You look for a potential future middle of the order slugger. Like you mentioned the frame, the projection on the frame, the swing, like the torque, the lower half. Like, he's got tree trunks for legs. He uses the lower half. The bat path is conducive to consistently driving the ball in the air. And he's been doing that already. Like, it's already starting to click for him. And you look at, he's been real good the entire season. But in his last 26 games in the DSL, get ready for this, 108 plate appearances, 397, 537, 949 slash, 7 doubles, 12 home runs, more walks than strikeouts. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. I had him, I think, around 85 in last month's update. Yeah, you know, I've already bumped him up right here where you have him, Chris. And heck, this guy might even bump up a little bit higher. I don't think the perceived value is on the same level as maybe Joendry Vargas, Walcott, Leo DeVries, these types of guys that we've been talking about. But I think he's either in that discussion or damn close to it. Like, he should be ranked pretty freaking close to those guys. Yeah, stock, get it now. It's already rising quickly. And if he comes stateside, or when he comes stateside, and if he continues the mash, like, this is like top 10 prospect upside, especially if he keeps running a little bit. Like, I agree. I don't think he'll be, especially if he fills out, a big source of speed, but decent athlete. So maybe he gives you 5 to 10 to go along with a bunch of home runs, you know, and a good average OBP. So yeah, this could be, you know, him and Vargas looking like the next two really big elite Dodger prospects.
Definitely agree there. Our next down, which is a bit disappointing to me, is Colson Montgomery of the White Sox. I've been waiting all year for him to turn it around in hopes that we would see him make his debut soon with the team, because all the tools were there. I'm just a little bit concerned right now with Montgomery. He had shown really good contact in the past, and some of that's regressed a little bit. I have questions about the kind of power that he gets to. Can he make enough quality contact to turn it into game power? And over the last several weeks, it's not been pretty for him. He has just 3 hits over the last 2 weeks. It's a 107 batting average with a 265 OBP and a 214 slug, which obviously is not good, but in line with what he's done all year. And I know he's spent the year in AAA. He's young. Can he turn it around? Absolutely. But I do think that Colson Montgomery has to be a faller at this point. He's got a sub-700 OPS. It's 12 home runs, but in 400 plate appearances, nothing to write home about, and 7 stolen bases. There's talking to a couple of scouts. It's the athleticism's regressed and hasn't really shown on the field this year. And that has not been the best. And I think that's discouraging me, because we saw him in the AFL and he looked good. He was healthy. And it's like, he told us in the interview, like, his goal was to prove to everybody that he could be a long-term shortstop. And people that I've talked to are a little bit out on that. Actually, I think that he probably has to move to third base, which puts a lot of pressure on this bat. What he's got going for him this year is the OBP skills are still there. He's walking in a high clip. He's chasing just a 25% mark this year, which is really good. And while the contact skills are, they've regressed a little bit, they're still fine. It's a 73% contact, 81% in zone. He's hit a ball as hard as 114 this year, which is good to see, but the average EV of 86, not all that great. So Colson Montgomery, definitely a faller, and definitely been a faller the last few weeks for sure. It's not been pretty for him. But Eric, any thoughts on Colson Montgomery?
Yeah, given that he wasn't a guy that we thought would provide really any speed outside of maybe a handful of steals a year, and the bat was really going to have to be there as the shortstop, third baseman, depending where he wound up. The bat really would have to stick out to him, justify the hype and then the high rankings he was getting. And I've always been a bit lower. I've always liked Montgomery. There was a time last year where, like, he was getting pushed. Like, how are you saying with Aiden Miller? Like, he was getting pushed into some top 15s, top 20s that I saw. And I just didn't really see it. In fact, that if the bat was going to be as good as everyone thought it could be, then yeah, that would have been justified. But you know, I was more reserved with my ranking of him. And you know, I still think he's a top 100 prospect. I think he's still a talented guy. Yeah, and the metrics aren't bad. Like you mentioned, contact rates are on 73%. Quality of contact is pretty average-ish right now. Overall, 86.5 EV, 38% hard hit rate, barrel rate's around 9%. So he's still doing some good, but yeah, back then he's had back issues as well, which kind of always concerned me. And everyone heard my podcasts on here and read my work. I'm very leery of back issues, especially with young players. And you know, in fact, if he was hitting better right now, he'd probably be up with Chicago right now, getting a test run here now that they have absolutely nobody left at the major league roster that's worth a damn outside of a couple. Did they lose again tonight? I haven't even looked at their score. Let's see. Are they? Where is it here?
They might be playing on the West Coast.
So. Oh, that's right. They're playing that. They're playing Oakland. Yeah, that game is just about to start. But potentially having a 22nd straight loss tonight. This would be a perfect time for them to bring him, up a Colson Montgomery and give him some, get his feet wet before making him the starter next year. And maybe they still will. They definitely absolutely could. Long term, I think he's 20, low 20s home runs, a solid average and solid OBP, not a lot of steals. So I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you're starting at shortstop or at third base. Maybe he could be a corner infield, middle infield option, depending on where he ends up. Sure, I think that upside is still there for him. But, yeah, it's been not terrible, but it's pretty lackluster year for Montgomery.
Yeah, and give you credit. You were always lower on Colson. I certainly was pretty in on him.
But, hey, flip-flop on the other one, though. We could flip-flop that with Miller. Yeah. I was going too high on Miller. You were more reserves. Hey, it all evens out. We win some, we lose some, right?
Yep, for sure. But, yeah, hopefully – Montgomery rebounds. I don't see why they don't give him a shot, even with his struggles. Just call him up, call the kids up, and let him play. But let's go to a riser, talk positive here. That's Mikey Romero, who this Greenville team's been hot. They've got a lot of hot bats. Seen Alan Castro been plenty hot. Yostinson Garcia, Miguel Blyce is picking it up. But Mikey Romero's run has been pretty incredible, and he is working on 6 straight multi-hit games at this point. Every game last week, multi-hit, which is pretty absurd. So he had 4 two-hit games and 2 four-hit games. But the streak goes even further back as far as his performance. And really, since the All-Star break, he's been scorching hot, came back out of the All-Star break, and the power came. And Romero, you talk about back issues. One that's had that, he missed time early in the year. But 12 games since the All-Star break, Romero has 8 home runs in those 12 games. He has 24 hits in those 12 games, which includes 6 doubles. And that's good for a 453, 500, 1019 slash, 1519 OPS is just stupid. 17% strikeout rate, 6.9% walk rate since the All-Star break, those 12 games. It's just been an incredible run for Romero. I've seen a lot of it firsthand. It's been a lot of fun to watch, but I still have some reservations long-term about Mikey Romero, but hard to argue these results. What he's doing is just pretty stupid to have 6 straight multi-hit games and 24 hits over your last 12. That's certainly something that gets you on the up of the 3 up and 3 down list. So, Eric, any thoughts here on Mikey Romero?
Yeah, no, it sure does. He's been absolutely on fire lately, but he falls into a bucket for me, and that's like these Red Sox middle infielders that, they're going to be major leaguers, but are they going to be fantasy viable players? Like Chase Meidroth fit into that bucket for me. Nick York was teetering on the edge of that bucket. Sometimes he was in it, other times he was a little bit more out, kind of Humpty Dumpty sitting on the wall on the side of that bucket. But the Red Sox have Cutter Coffee. So a lot of these infielders, they're stockpiling middle infielders. That's great. But how many of these guys are actually going to provide value to us fantasy managers? Probably not many, unless they get, Nick York now out of the system, Matthew Lugo out of the system. He was getting an infielder, an outfielder. But I don't see, a fantasy future here for Romero. He's a decent little player. Nothing really stands out, but no glaring weaknesses either. Solid field to hit, a little bit of pop, probably a fringe average power guy. Not really much of a runner. I don't think he'll ever be one either. So I don't know. It's been a fun little streak for him here and tuning in to see what he does every night. But yeah, I don't really see. I'm not like saying, oh, run out and pick him up off the waiver wire. Maybe in deeper leagues, just as a flyer, but that's really about it.
Yeah, I agree. It's average tools across the board. He's not going to run. The EVs aren't all that high. So I'm enjoying the hot streak. I think it's been one of the better hot streaks we've seen. But Cutter Coffee also did that, and they shipped him out at the All-Star breaks. Yeah, I'm interested to see what the future holds for Romero. Certainly hope for the best, but the back does give me worries. Let's finish out the show, sadly, on a negative, but probably one of the bigger players that we have discussed, and that's Carson Williams, who had an incredible first half of the year, and he's fallen off a bit as of recent, and things have been looking a little bit bleak at this point. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, this includes several multi-hit games in the last 2 weeks, but still just a 238, 319, 286 slash over that span, 25.5% strikeout rate over that time, which I would say is still encouraging, actually, to me. Just one extra base hit. It is a triple. And I do think Williams has made some improvements, which is good. He's certainly improved against breaking balls, which is good. That was one of the bigger struggles, and he's made those strides. The contact has actually trended in the right direction all season, which I like to see. And the contact rates have actually been a little bit better over this kind of cold stretch, which is good. When I look at this profile of Carson Williams, he's a glove first 60-70 grade shortstop that's really strong in the field. The hit tool's certainly probably below average, but there's power and there's speed. He's got 14 homers and 28 steals this year. I still like the profile, but I will say we do have to look at this and say he's certainly been struggling, especially in the month of July.
Yeah, no, he absolutely has. And, you know, back before the draft here, obviously before we got the nice little influx of new players and rankings we're getting, there's still obviously a lot of players, but we were losing some guys. It was getting a little thinned out. So especially with all the top guys we were losing to the major leagues, I'm like, all right, Williams is a guy that could be one of those next guys to sneak into the back end of the top 10. But then right at the same time, he started struggling. And if you look at over the last 33 games, he's hitting 190 with only three home runs. Actually, zero doubles over that 33-game stretch, which is really weird. How many? He's gone, let's see, another eight games. He's gone 41 games without a double. He has three home runs, three triples in that time, but weird to see no doubles over a quarter of an entire season. But, you know, you mentioned it, though, how good he is. He's one of those guys outside of the hit tool. Like, the rest of the game is really exciting, right? Like, he's a potential gold glove caliber shortstop with a good arm. No worries about him moving off the position. He has above average power and speed. So he's one of those guys where if the hit tool can at least just be like fringe average, hit 250, which I think is possible, keep the K rate under 30%, and hit 250, something like that. You could look at that, 20-plus home runs, 25-plus steals, maybe a little bit better in the OBP department. He's always been a guy that walks at a decent clip. So that's why I still have him top 25. I think he's still a top 25 talent. We've seen the ups and downs, but overall the numbers are still pretty damn good. You look at the totality of his 2024 season, and he'll get a longer leash the most to try to work through some of the ups and downs of his hitting struggles, given that his defense can be so valuable to a team like Tampa Bay. Yeah, I would look to buy low right now. I think he's a very talented player going through a rough patch. And yeah, that red flag is there, but there's still a lot of green flags in that profile as well. So I would look to buy low on Carson Williams.
Yep, for sure. But that is going to wrap us up. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hope you have a good day. And until next time, we will talk to you later.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.